special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
I just want to really acknowledge somebody that should be here. I wish he was here tonight. John Hughes, who, you know, without whom we wouldn't be here.
I feel that we need John Hughes today more than ever.
Weird Science. Now that was a good movie. Pretty in Pink. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
When they were going to do that thing for MTV, when they spoke to me about it, I said, well, it's Hughes. And they're like, no.
We're on our way to Chicago because that's where John Hughes shot all the movies, and that's where John Hughes currently lives.
No one goes to make a film about teenagers without drawing from John Hughes. No one goes to make a movie about teenagers without watching John Hughes films again.
I'll go.
Shh. Why kids still respond to these films is because he put his heart into it.
I think John's writing characters very often that were sort of him.
Everybody felt akin. Everybody knew somebody who was on that screen.
All the people I went to school with were like the people in Breakfast Club.
We've realized the most important thing to do here is to actually go and find the man himself and get the answers from him if you possibly can.
He has no idea who we are. He doesn't know who we are. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to talk to people.
Yeah, that raises the bar. He loves to say that raises the bar.
John Hughes had a very distinctive voice and take. None will ever have the tone, the theme, the spark the imagination like those works did. Hughes was just insanely gifted.
I guess I've been subconsciously kind of waiting for that moment where nobody has seen the movie anymore. And that moment hasn't come, really.
I'd like to try and get as much information as I can.
Like, is he well-known in his hometown?
Do you know him?
Oh, I know him, yeah.
That's what I'm trying to explain to you. You don't know where you're going.
No one in my estimation has come close to what John achieved.
Hi, yes, I have a message for John Hughes.
Ah, yes. 80s teen flick director John Hughes dies in New York at the age of 59. And when I was looking for some kind of clip, news clip, something to go along with that, I discovered there's a documentary being made called Don't You Forget About Me. And it's basically about the disappearance of John Hughes, who more or less, after I believe Curly Sue in 92, dropped off the face of the earth. And so there's a documentary about Hughes and his impact. And this from the Associated Press, writer-director John Hughes, Hollywood's youth impresario of the 1980s and 90s, who captured the teen and preteen market with such favorites as The Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and Home Alone, died Thursday, August 6th. Hughes died of a heart attack during a morning walk in Manhattan. He was in New York City to visit family. A native of Lansing, Michigan, who later moved to suburban Chicago and set much of his work there, Hughes rose from comedy writer to ad writer to silver screen champ with his affectionate and idealized portraits of teens, whether the romantic and sexual insecurity of 16 Candles or the J.D. Salinger-esque rebellion against conformity in The Breakfast Club. I'm not going to go on and on about it here, but if you're anywhere near my age, The Breakfast Club had a huge effect. Pretty much know all the lines and can recite them. The dirty and the TV edit. But ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the B-side of episode 134 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you early Friday morning. It's 9:11 a.m., August 7th, 2009. I'm at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, in southeast Portland, Oregon. So much to go over. And that's what forces me to pull off a B-side, the extras, the addendums, all the things that won't fit into 135. So, welcome, new and old listeners. I appreciate you being here. You want to know what's going on, and I think Media Monarchy gives you a good rundown of just about everything going down in the New World Order. We've got some updates. 146 photos of Air Force One. That's right. 146 photos of Air Force One stunt released thanks to Freedom of Information Act requests. This from BNONews.com, breaking news organization. They obtained 146 photos from the Air Force One flyover in New York City that happened in late April of this year. The Department of Defense decided to release them after dozens of news organizations filed FOIA requests. 115 of the 146 are linked up on BNO News. They left out the difference there because they were too identical and the photos are huge anyway. So I definitely recommend going there, pulling all those photos down. And again, if you use, I can always kind of give you the back view into how I do what I do here. If you've got some good plugins, if you're using Firefox, there are some nice download everything plugins, and of course, things to pull down the flash videos from YouTube and all those kind of things. So don't neglect that. So it's easy to go to a page where there's 115 photos posted up and just hit down them all. And you got it. So of course, the flashbacks, low-flying Air Force One look-alike freaks out New York, going back to April 27th. And then, of course, White House won't release photos, and then they will, and they did, and there was one. And Louis Caldera, the guy pinpointed to be the one behind the Air Force One, was canned. And also, to remind you of, amazingly enough, there's no audio. It's a short video. But the video I grabbed from myfoxny.com and posted it up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy.com. Or rather, youtube.com/mediamonarchy. You know where it is. My most watched video. I look at it right now. It's got 204,000 plus views. And I don't think I need to remind you about what that stunt kind of seemed like at the time. I kind of explained it that it seemed as though it was trying to revive 9/11 terror and supplant it to the new current terrors, whether it's the financial collapse or the swine flu, which was right around the same time. Old terror, new ideas. Let's blast through the 8-6 News Purge, Mystery Media, Mayhem, and more. First, the history mystery. Gulf War One pilots' remains have been found. Sands hid the fate of Gulf War pilot lost since 1991. Navy pilot Michael Scott Speecher, S-P-E-I-C-H-E-R. Michael Scott Speecher was shot down over the Iraq desert on the first night of the Gulf War in 91, and it was there he apparently was buried by Bedouins. The sand hiding him from the world's mightiest military all these years. In a sorrowful resolution to the nearly two-decade-old question about his fate, the Pentagon disclosed Sunday that it had received new info last month from an Iraqi citizen that led Marines to recover bones and skeletal fragments enough for a positive ID. Former Philippine President Corazon Aquino, dead at the age of 86, and an article from Examiner.com on the Georgia Guidestones. They call it a sign of the coming New World Order. On the media memes, Dan Rather calls for White House to save journalism from financial hardship. This is from businessandmedia.org, and this is something that we went into great detail on my recent interview with writer-journalist Albert Lanier. Now, there's so much going on, I haven't had time to post up that interview. I just had it yesterday. It's less than, 18 hours old. Hopefully, by the time you're listening to this, all these episodes today will go up. 134B, 135, my new interview with Albert Lanier about crisis in journalism and the new alternative media. So we go into that. We've also got Hollywood Destroys the World. New wave of disaster films isn't about staving off the apocalypse. That's from the Wall Street Journal. And you know, I love to go into all the media memes and predictive programming. But we don't have time. But it's there for you. And you know what it's about. We even talked about Soylent Green last week, I believe. But we've got the Book of Eli, 2012. All those things coming back. To go deeper into the deep politics of Hollywood, hit up Cryptagon for Close Encounters with the Pentagon. And it hops to an article by way of Information Clearinghouse, and it goes into, of course, the cozy relationship between folks like Michael Bay or Tony Scott and their movies, Transformers, Pearl Harbor, or Top Gun, Enemy of the State. Interestingly enough, from Robert Perry on Consortium News, General Electric muzzles Olbermann about Fox. Again, Albert Lanier and I go into great detail about this and how it kind of shows the big business and the phony left-right. Because Olbermann works for GE, he was always ragging on Bill O'Reilly and Fox. O'Reilly hates GE, so the heads of those companies got together and said, hey guys, cool it. And they did. Because it's fake, professional wrestling garbage. On to the murder and mayhem. If it bleeds, it leads. Homeless man causes bomb scare at LaGuardia Airport in New York City. A 6.9 earthquake in Baja, California. Internet addict killed at Chinese boot camp. That's from techradar.com. Investigations continue into Thai plane accident. Wrong way driver in New York. Crash was drunk. And we, of course, have the gunman just outside of Pittsburgh. Bridgeville. Gunman kills 4, wounds 10 at U.S. exercise studio. Here's early reporting from the Deutsche Press Agency. A gunman opened fire in a fitness center outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, killing at least 4 people and wounding 10. Police in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, said the gunman was believed to be among the dead in Tuesday evening shooting, in addition to at least 4 victims, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported. PR officials from the hospital that received shooting victims said most or all were younger women, several with multiple bullet wounds. Witnesses told the newspaper that the gunman walked into a fitness club with a duffel bag before drawing a rifle, which he turned on a women's exercise class. More disturbing details about this have poured out, and we've got more from Wikinews, an AP video report. And then it came out later, the next day, BBC, U.S. Jim Gunman's internet plans. And it goes into his problems with women and everything that he put up online. But as usual, Lauren Coleman of the Copycat Effect has death at Bridgeville. The killer, identified by authorities and noted by himself on his website diary as George A. Sodini, a.k.a. Crazy George, has left a vast internet trail of his musings of hate, e.g. black men have their choice with the best white girls. The 48-year-old's rampage plans are also documented in his web DOD date of death entries on the shooting. Sodini said he would die on August 4th, 2009. Now, of course, like Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect does, what he calls Twilight Language, goes into the bizarre connections of Bridgeville, Pennsylvania. And it's actually quite close to Wheeling, West Virginia. West Virginia being my home state, which we'll mention more of in just a second. But first, my current home state, the People's Republic of Oregon. Two notes of Oregon oddities. First, Silverton, Oregon Mayor Stu Rasmussen's clothing complaints. And that's a video clip. It's up on Deutsche Press Agency. And that is about Stu Rasmussen, the first transgendered mayor in the USA. The other, from the Seattle Post-Intelligencer TV video, shows man confessing to Oregon slayings. A man charged with murdering three people in eastern Oregon said Wednesday that he's responsible for the deaths. He confessed on camera to a KING King TV news crew from Seattle. And the West Virginia Note, by way of Forbes.com, you know, this can only be good. Former West Virginia credit union chief indicted. We could have put this under Econo Crash. The former chief executive of a failed West Virginia credit union has been indicted on charges of embezzling about $9 million in money laundering. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of West Virginia says the indictment against 56-year-old Valley Grove resident Bernie Metz was returned Monday. He's accused of taking funds from Center Valley Federal Credit Union in Wheeling, West Virginia, over a five-year period that ended in January. We just mentioned Wheeling. It's on to the BioWars and swine flu updates. There's so much important stuff in here, and I'm totally not doing it justice because I'm just cramming it into a B-side that, admittedly, I believe less people listen to than the main flagship show. But again, the info is on the page. I read it into the record on the show. Spread the word. Read up on it yourself. BioWars and swine flu updates. Walmart, DynCorp in the disease industry. A great one from JustGetThere.us. Predictive programming. TV movie shows riots, quarantines, and mass graves for pandemic flu. Fatal contact. Bird flu in America. This actually goes back to 2006. But there's nice photos of the cops and kids in quarantine masks, and it has that nice look of 28 days later. Walmart weighs role in U.S. H1N1 vaccination plan. Or more to the point, Walmart wants to dispense the coming untested H1N1 vaccine. Be something like out of an under budget B flick. Shoppers pushing carts stacked with cheap plastic goods manufactured by slaves in China, queuing up in a grubby annex at the local Walmart to get a toxic shot of mercury, disodium phosphate, squalene, chicken embryos, and various virus cultures. And they're all listed on the Glaxo Biopharma database linked up for you. But unfortunately, this isn't science fiction. Not if Walmart has its way. And they usually do. A disturbing one from thestar.com. Flu scare a boon to body bag sales. Body bag sales are booming in the anticipation of corpses piling up this fall. Senior citizens left off government's swine flu vaccination priority list. We've covered that before. New stuff from CNSNews.com. Pentagon planning deployment of troops in support of nationwide vaccination. That's from globalresearch.ca, another fantastic, lengthy, well-documented article from Michelle Shosadovsky. Utah prepares swine flu vaccinations. That's from KSL.com. New HIV strain seen in woman from Cameroon. This is from CBS News. And that's a disturbing note, especially with what we're going to get to in a moment. 27,000-pound swine flu bonuses for general practitioners in the UK. Basically, every time they jab an arm, a cash register goes cha-ching. Bringing the bio-war home, that's from Anti-Fascist Calling, and Tom Burkhardt is, I believe, who wrote the article we hit last week about America's 28 days later. Greece to enforce mandatory swine flu vaccinations. More evidence revealing the intentional collusion to create a pandemic. Health officials admit fast-tracked vaccines will not be tested for safety. Again, great work from JustGetThere.us. Vaccination myths and truths. More from Global Research. There's a Fort Worth firm testing swine flu vaccines on volunteers. So hop over to DallasNews.com and learn how to line up, roll up. Now, here it is. And this could be a whole show, and this probably should be a whole show. Diseased African monkeys used to make swine flu vaccines, and private military contractor DynCorp holds some of the key patents. To most people, vaccines sound medically harmless. They're good for you, say the doctors and drug companies, but they never really talk about what's in them. There's a good reason for that. If people knew what was really in the vaccines, they would never allow themselves to be injected with it. Aside from the dangerous ingredients many people already know about, like squalene or thimerosal, one of the key ingredients used in flu vaccines, including the vaccines being prepared for the swine flu pandemic, is the diseased flesh of African green monkeys. This is revealed in a U.S. patent number 5911998, method of producing a virus vaccine from an African green monkey kidney cell line. Linked up on patentstorm.us. As this patent readily explains, ingredients used in the vaccine are derived from the kidneys of African green monkeys who are first infected with the virus, then allowed to fester the disease, and then are killed so that their diseased organs can be used to make vaccine ingredients. This is done in a cruel, inhumane flesh factory environment where the monkeys are subjected to a process that includes, quote, incubating said inoculated cell line to permit proliferation of said virus, and then harvesting the virus resulting from step C and subset 2, preparing a vaccine from the harvested virus. Aside from the outrageous cruelty taking place with all this, incubating the virus in the kidneys of living monkeys, for example, there's another disturbing fact that has surfaced in all this. The patent for this process is held not just by the National Institutes of Health, but by another private corporation known as DynCorp. The article goes into more about DynCorp and government collusion and important questions that need to be asked and answered. More great work from Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, on naturalnews.com. DynCorp, D-Y-N-C-O-R-P. They're responsible for human trafficking. We constantly do business with them. Google DynCorp Halliburton sex slave scandal won't go away. There's more from naturalnews.com. He held a teleconference to further go into this African monkey virus vaccine. And then it came out that there's going to be a nice little international swine flu conference to be held in the District of Criminals, August 19th through the 21st. There's a PDF attachment about the swine flu conference that you can download. Be very afraid. The last note, and I guess we just passed the anniversary, and that's probably why we've seen the latest flitter and flutter of articles about the lone gunman of the anthrax attacks. That's Bruce Ivins. But from USA Today, anthrax case not closed. Panel reviews Bruce Ivins and the mail probe. Essentially, the government has even stopped trying to prove that Ivins even did it, because he's dead. Go away. Nothing to see here. Sidebar, I recall I was visiting my family when Bruce Ivins was suicided. And I was explaining a lot of stuff about it to my mom, who, you know, patiently listens. And I try and go, you know, and again, I was talking about 9/11 questions to my mom and dad back in 03. And again, they politely listened. And now I think 6 years later, they go, I don't want to think about it, but I think he makes sense. It's probably as much as they would admit. But I remember talking to mom about how stinky the Ivins case looked and what to watch for, and basically called something in advance about, you know, we'll watch when they'll bring out the sort of the cover-up artists. And I reeled off some people. And then an hour later, we were flipping through the news, and who do they have on but Jared Posner supporting the official story of Bruce Ivins, the anthrax lone gunman. Jared Posner, of course. Case closed. JFK bullshit. Let's shift gears. Keep moving quickly. Let's hop over to foodworldorder.com. This is an ugly little update to something we first posted back in March, one of the earliest postings on foodworldorder.com. But here's the bad update. The Obama's organic garden ruined by sewage sludge for fertilizer. This from BuzzLog. New homes are full of questions and possibilities. What color to paint the walls? How to arrange the furniture? What to plant in the garden? The Obama family must have asked a lot of those same questions when they moved into the White House. However, the First Lady's dreams of growing an organic vegetable garden have been dragged down by a previous resident that refuses to leave. Sludge. Various sources within the Buzz log are reporting that Michelle Obama's organic, quote-unquote, garden has been besieged by icky goo in the ground. As a result, the veggies aren't quite what the First Lady had in mind. According to Daily Finance, the National Park Service tested the soil in the veggie patch and found, quote, highly elevated levels of lead, end quote, due to sewage used as fertilizer. So the question is, who's to blame? While dumping sewage into the ground sounds like a crime worthy of Mr. Burns from The Simpsons, the actual perpetrators were none other than the Clintons. Yep. Back when Billary were living it up in the White House, their gardening team used sewage sludge for fertilizer. The fiends! Sounds gross, but it's actually, unfortunately, fairly common. However, it does mean that the highly touted, quote-unquote, organic garden will never, quote, attain organic status, end quote. The certification process doesn't allow the use of sludge as fertilizer substitute, and there's another problem, as if the kids weren't into eating their veggies before, it's going to be that much harder to get them to eat them now. Ha ha ha, from the Yahoo Buzz log. But very symbolic. Very symbolic of the change, I believe. This segues well into the latest Enviro Health updates, Big Pharma, Vatican pills, and the smart grid. First from AlertNet, antidepressant use doubles in U.S. Study finds use of antidepressant drugs in the U.S. doubled between 96 and 05. Probably because of a mix of factors, researchers reported on Monday. About 6% of people were prescribed an antidepressant in 96, 13 million people. This rose to more than 10%, or 27 million people, by 2005. Quote, significant increases in antidepressant use were evident across all socio-demographic groups examined, except African Americans. End quote. Dr. Mark Olfson of Columbia University in New York and Stephen Marcus of the University of Pennsylvania in Philly wrote in the Archives of General Psychiatry. Quote, not only are more U.S. residents being treated with antidepressants, but also those who are being treated are receiving more antidepressant prescriptions. Now, you can hit up just the quick abstract on their report. I could not find a full copy, not without registering and yada yada. There's more on this from ABC News, and I think it's fascinating to note that it's doubled in everybody except African Americans. And I don't know if they go into that further in some of these articles. I can only speculate, and it's interesting to ruminate on. The simplest answer is probably they can't fucking afford the big pharma garbage. So good for them. On some levels. I don't know. World's largest science group rejecting man-made climate fears. That's from newswithviews.com. But interestingly, from BBC, more on the hypocrisy. Catholic bank-owned shares in birth control pill company. A Roman Catholic bank in Germany, Pax Bank, has apologized after admitting that it bought stocks in defense, tobacco, and birth control companies. Der Spiegel discovered the bank had invested 580,000 euros in the British arms company BAE Systems. It also invested 160,000 euros in American birth control pill maker Wyeth. and also 870,000 in tobacco companies, that being the biggest number. The bank apologized for behavior, quote, not in keeping with ethical standards, end quote. Not in keeping with the ethical standards of, what, Catholics or banks? Insert snide jokes here. Pacific Northwest National Lab gets stimulus money for smart grid research. That's from the Tri-City Herald. But for more on that, we should take the flashback to Infowars.com. Smart grid government spying targets rural America. This goes back to March 7th. And this is from originally RFDAmerica.com. And it goes into the smart grid, and I can't help to explain it here. But of course, it involves IBM. And RFIDs. What's really in Obama's health care reform bill? There's a nice plain English translation by way of naturalnews.com. Because, you know, what's really in the bill, no one knows. Because it's 1,017 pages long and written in an alien form of bureaucratic English that can barely be decoded by earthlings. But they link over and help explain some of the writings from FreeRepublic.com. The last bit on EnviroHealth, the White House asks people to spy on healthcare dissidents. The WhiteHouse.gov blog has released an appeal under the header, Facts Are Stubborn Things, asking people to flag, quote, scary chain emails and videos starting to percolate on the internet claiming to, quote unquote, uncover the truth about presidents' health insurance reform positions. There's a video of a snotty woman talking about this. And again, what's so great, especially if when the feds have the social networking channels, if they don't filter the commenting and things too much, you can go to these pages and see that everybody goes to them and hates on them and puts up truther quotes and links. And the rating is always one star. Another update to a story we hit in June. But now we have more ex-Scientologists coming forward with accounts of abuse. If you recall, the St. Petersburg Times delivered a brutal expose, the Scientology leadership rife with physical violence. So we return to the St. Petersburg Times. They are stepping forward from Dallas and Denver, Portland, Las Vegas, Montana, talking about what happened to them and their friends during their years in the Church of Scientology. All these and other former Scientology staffers are talking now, inspired and emboldened by the raw revelations of four defectors from the church's executive ranks who broke years of silence in stories published recently by the St. Petersburg Times, those behind-the-scenes accounts from Marty Rathbun and Mike Rinder, the highest officials ever to leave Scientology, were buttressed by detailed revelations of highly placed former managers Amy Scobie and Tom DeVocht. Now, their stories have prompted other former Scientology veterans to go public about physical and mental abuses they say they witnessed and endured. An interesting tie-in and a related update to this from the Times Online, a secret mission to expose Hubbard as a fake. And I have to say, the work that activists have done against Scientology has been pretty amazing. Not only over the last decades, but especially over the last couple of years with Anonymous and all the other related things. They do good work, and they've really exposed and I think destroyed whatever kind of reputation Scientology had in the public's eye. Anyway, I maybe wish that energy and passion went into exposing some other things going on as well. But hey, sometimes we're all just one person. That's pretty much going to do it for this B-Side 134 from MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. so much to go over. That's why I make these special episodes, trying to cover it all, trying to read it all into the record. I know not everybody can spend all the time on the page, and the podcasts are probably good as you guys commute or do whatever you do. So it's great. Please spread the word. We're going to go out on a fun note. We laugh because it's funny, and we laugh because it's true. U.S. government stages a fake coup to wipe out national debt. This, of course, from the Onion News Network. Congress says that with, you know, no way to actually pay back our debts, faking a coup to eliminate financial obligations is the best plan for the U.S. economy.
To the financial fallout shelter with the national debt now more than $10 trillion. The White House today enacted an emergency plan to eliminate all of the United States' financial obligations to foreign nations by faking a violent coup of the American government. The coup is expected to take much of the strain off of America's real economy, providing the global community does not discover the ruse. The fake coup began at 10 a.m. today when fake rebel leader Octavius Del Monte stormed Congress and pretended to kill several congressmen.
Hear my words, China, Japan, and the United Arab Emirates, the United States of America, and all its vast debt no longer exists. Henceforth, this land will be called Octavia. Do not even try to collect funds owed.
The militants brandished plastic guns and wore costumes. Lawmakers stayed up late last night making themselves.
I mean, we have the wrong answer. Oh! Now, what is the meaning of this?
Quiet, woman!
After a five-minute mock battle, Congress and the President ceded control of the nation to Octavius, who is believed to be played by Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Charles Conner.
You know how when someone dies and all their debts go away and no one has to pay them? Well, this is like that, except with countries.
The country's creditors will be told the paper containing the country's debts was destroyed in the scuffle.
Someone save the record of our debts!
Congress will also use computer graphics to simulate some of the fake coup's more complicated details, such as the explosion that blows up the Treasury building. Representatives on both sides of the aisle said the plan was the best option left for lowering our debt after ideas like burning down the country for the insurance money and disguising the nation as Canada were deemed infeasible. The White House is also asking all American citizens to call their friends in other countries to complain about the new dictatorship. And in accordance with pretending to comply with Octavius's media control policy, this network will now be broadcasting Octavius' national anthem for 3 hours every day. Thank you for watching, and God bless Octavia.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
I mean, it's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Say, out on my track.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.